Maurice Mobetta Brown, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
For coming on Nocturnal Journal. And tell us about your band. It's been a long time since I've seen you.
It's been a minute, man.
2001.
It's been over a decade, I believe, right?
Thank you so much for bringing everybody in here.
Yeah, man, my pleasure.
I know you got a gig coming up at Martyrs, but tell us all you got here. You got quite an audience outside of Michigan.
How's everybody doing out there?
So before we start with the questions, who all do you have with you tonight?
Well, we got Alejandro playing guitar. So
okay.
Me and Alejandro are good friends from Northern Illinois University.
Okay.
And we have Will on the bass, playing bass. And me and Will actually just met each other. The drummer and the bass player and the keyboard player, we just met each other right now. Because my band that's coming in for out of town, they don't come in to the gig.
Right, okay.
And so, yeah, and Tim is great. Tim's playing keys. I just met him. He's a great addition. And we have Quinn on the drums, laying down the grooves. So.
Again, thanks for bringing everybody in here. Now, our story, you've got a gig coming up in Martyrs. We'll talk about that. But
yeah.
I met you, what was it, right after Katrina?
That's right.
And I did a little story for the Sun-Times about the Miles Davis trumpet you had.
Mm-hmm.
So pick it up there. You were living in New Orleans. You're from the Harvey?
Harvey, Illinois, yeah. I'm from Harvey, Illinois. I went to Northern Illinois University. Then I went to Southern University in Baton Rouge. That's what got me to Louisiana to study with the late, great Alvin Batiste.
Right.
And so that whole Miles Davis story was I won the Miles Davis competition, and that was one of the prizes they gave you. So his daughter presented it to me at the competition. It was in St. Louis, his hometown. And that was definitely it's definitely one of my prized possessions that I had that I didn't really play a lot, but I just kept in the house and like the trophy case, you know?
It was, I had in my notes, it was red. Was it red with gold trim?
Yeah, red and gold trim.
And was it lost during Katrina?
Yeah, well, no, I actually wound up getting it back, but I had to get some work done on it. So thank God for that. I was able to recover it. But it was for a while, it was like so many things like that I was going through during that time. It's, so emotional when I think about it, because it was like a fairy tale before Katrina. Like, I mean, New Orleans was just like the perfect place. You know, I had my steady gigs, you know, at Snug Harbor.
Snug Harbor.
And I was doing that every Tuesday and then playing at the Funky Bud and playing at Tipitina's. And I was just all over the Blue Nile. And, I mean, it really was a dream. As much as I wanted to work, I could work and, you know, made really good money and spread it. The music, and spread the music all over and spread love everywhere. Good food, good weather, and then boom, Katrina, you know. So that really was hard, you know, to have to uplift everything and reroute my whole life, basically, because I wasn't ready to make a move yet. I was really too comfortable where I was at and feeling really situated, like, you know, feeling like I was in the right place at the right time, basically.
And did you come up to Chicago for a while? I know you're in New York
right
now.
Right after. I moved to the Gold Coast, Gortha and Richie. So I was there. And then I decided to say, you know what? I think I should go to New York because this is pretty expensive here. And I think I should just go to New York if I'm going to pay this kind of money to live or whatever. And so I just made the decision to go to New York. It was the best decision I ever made, you know.
And when did you go there?
It was basically right after Katrina, six, eight months after Katrina, you know, and from there I just hit the ground running, lots of studio work and production, producing and horn arranging and just everything.
How did you, I don't know if I ever asked you this, how did you get into music in the first place? Was it around the house, your parents?
My parents definitely played a lot of music. Growing up, like a lot of blues. I heard a lot of blues coming up, a lot of funk and blues and soul music and jazz. So that was like my foundation before I even knew what a note was. You know, I knew good music and bad music, at least from what my parents played, because they were connoisseurs.
And what did your parents do for a living?
My dad was a refrigerator repairman, and there's like a air conditioners and stuff, essential air, stuff like that. And my father just passed away like last week. So that's a part of the reason why I'm coming in with a different band and everything, like last minute, trying to pull it all together right now, because I've been kind of off my rocker. Today's like the first day that I really got back to my horn since my father passed away. So it's definitely a process, you know.
You said the show's 7:30 and 11, the 28th, July 28th at Martyrs.
At Martyrs, yeah. We're dedicating the show
dedicated
to my father. And
the
great Taleb Kweli will be there to assist. He's also a featured guest on the album, the new album, The Mood.
The Mood, yeah.
Yeah, and Chris Turner and Jay Ivey are also featured guests for the show and the album, The Mood. So it's going to be basically The Mood live in Chicago, you know, full blast.
Those shows are going to sell out, right?
Yeah. I'm excited.
Have you played Martyrs before?
I did. We just played it
December.
December. Really, really good. For the annual holiday party, Mo' Better holiday party we do in Chicago, I always switch the venue up, so you never know where it's going to be until like a week before the party, but it's always packed.
That's why I wanted to ask you is how does environment inform your music? I mean, like, I know you played the Green Mill, Jazz Showcase, Snug Harbor, I know, down in New Orleans, Martyrs, which maybe some people would say is more of a rock club. But how does environment inform what you play?
Well, that's a good question, because I'm at the stage in my life right now where I like to play a lot of intimate settings, and I like the connection with the audience. But also, I feel that the music that I play sometimes doesn't directly match the venue. So if I'm playing in a very, very jazzy, traditional jazz spot, and people are listening to me like they want to dance, you know, like it's not really like eat your dinner and watch me play kind of music. It's more like party music. Like you want to feel alive. We're celebrating life when you come to a Mo' Better show. You come to Maurice Brown show. We all are spreading love, and that's the whole goal. To it's like church for us when we come together, you know.
Okay, we got to take a break for some commercials, and we'll be back. We'll talk a little bit more, and we'll have some more music after the news.
Cool.
So don't go away on WGN's Nocturnal Journal. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. We're here with the critically acclaimed Maurice Mo' Better Brown. Yeah, you've really taken off since I met you years ago. How old are you?
36.
You're doing.
Yeah, you met me. I don't know how old I was when you met me.
Well,
I guess
2001.
Like
2005. Yeah, we're 25.
A year after I put Hip to Bop out, my first album. Wow.
Well, you know, that's the thing is, I like the way that you kind of bend genres and stuff. I mean, I think after I met you, you ended up with the Tedeschi Trucks Band as a horn section leader. Talk about that, and talk about the different worlds you float in.
Yeah, it's real interesting. You know, I've done a lot of work with the jam band world with Lettuce, Eric Krasno, and Lettuce, and Soul Life. So that's my whole family and that crew. And I think that's how I basically got introduced to Derek Trucks, because when he quit the Derek Trucks Band and put together the Tedeschi Trucks Band with his wife, Susan Tedeschi, they wanted a horn section. And so I got called. They say, man, we want you to do the Tedeschi Trucks Band. Come down to Jacksonville. Come fill it out. See what you think, you know. And I called my friend Saunders Sermons, who's a great trombonist, you know, plays with everybody from Jay-Z to everybody. And Kebby Williams was already a guy that Derek was in touch with already, because he guested or sat in with the Derek Trucks Band a few times, and Derek knew he wanted to get back with him. So we had this horn section together, and it was just like a dream, you know. We did 5 years with Tedeschi Trucks. Yeah.
When you did arrangements, did you build off of his guitar, or how did that work?
Definitely. Derek's his guitar is definitely the anchor of the whole ship, you know.
Right.
So basically, my job was basically to be in a supportive role where we could get the horns together and get some rememberable horn lines that would just complement everything that him and Sue had going on. I think it worked out really well. So,
were there feelings in the quote-unquote jazz world about you moving over into the jam band world? Or I don't know how those barriers work.
Yes,
or boundaries,
yes,
maybe, not barriers.
But, you know, it's weird because, I mean, I never really catered to that anyway.
Right.
So I feel like with me, I've never been like having to say, oh, jazz, jazz, jazz. It's been the jazz community seeing me doing well and, you know, putting claim to that. Yeah, he's one of our guys, you know, because I play with a lot of great jazz players. So I got my start since I was 16 years old, from, you know, Oscar Peterson to Elvin Jones to Benny Golson. All these guys, you know, I learned so much from them. Dr. Billy Taylor.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Clark Terry.
The list goes on. And then, you know, not just jazz or jam band or blues, but hip hop. Obviously, you know, I've done lots of work in hip hop and R&B. And so producing and horn arranging for that genre too. So I think all my fans are coming from all over, from like the jam band world, from the jazz world, and the funk. And we have this little middle section where they all kind of blend in. And that's what you get, all these like-minded people who are just want to push the boundaries and just want to feel alive, you know, just want to feel something, you know, like you, they don't want anything generic, that's for sure. You know?
And is that will be the audience at July 28th at Mobetta Brown with Todd Kweli at Martyrs?
Oh, yeah. It definitely is going to be the audience.
3855 North Lincoln.
Yeah, the cool thing about a lot of my shows is that, you know, it's mixed up as far as, like, the age limit or the races or whatever. It doesn't matter. All kinds of people, big, small, tall, you know, kids. Like, we have an all ages show at 7, and then at 10:30 we have the 21 and up show, because that's just the vibe.
That's great,
you know, it's like, it's just all love, and we're making music that everyone can just like let loose to, you know.
Clark Terry, correct me if I'm wrong, told you to be careful not to get too hip. You know what you get when you get too hip. This is for you.
Yes. How do you guys know these things, man?
I'm a well researched interviewer. But
oh wow,
what happens when you get too hip?
Well, you know, when you get too hip, you get a. You know, it's kind of like assuming, you know,
Yeah. But I could see where, like, I didn't see that, an all ages show. I can see where kids really, you must really connect with the children.
Yeah, it's been cool.
You got such a great personality.
It's been fun. Yeah. Like, I love to work with the youth and to do work. I've been doing a lot of work with Carnegie Hall with their cultural exchange program. So we've been to, like, you know, New Mexico and Istanbul and all over, just sharing the music and exchanging dialogue with different cultures. It's been great.
Okay, we're going to take a break for David Jennings in the news, and you're going to play a couple more tracks from your new record, The Mood, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is really special tonight. So you still got that big crowd on Michigan Avenue, so don't go away on Nocturnal Journal.
Stop rock and roll, everybody lose control. Everything I did it since I'm 4 years old. The air, land, and the sea, they get into your soul. And I'm like a space rocket just waiting to explode. Need to stand for something, take a stand for something. Lift a hand for something, take my hand for something. Understand it's nothing. Gotta stand for something, or we fall for nothing. Time to stop the fretting. Yeah, we stand for something, never fall for nothing. That's all we wantin'. Stop rock and roll, everybody lose control. Everything I did it since I'm 4 years old. The air, land, and the sea, they get into your soul. And I'm like a space rocket just waiting to explode. Homeless beings on this planet begging and getting cash. Now I'm seeing what they seeing, they know it never lasts. Getting high for supply, they say they getting low. You ain't hearing what they saying, send them to the stove. My brothers befriended them, cops, they ain't standard them. Black folks prep for the police, but now they scared to come. Took my man's debt in the street, face on the pavement. killing, and yes, they get away with it. Right now, I fear they only see me one way. And I know you counting sins, feeling some type of way. But you cuss and sit on me, and then you hope that I stay. But I wonder what they say when I come back and play. Be like, lift a hand for something, take my hand for something, understand it's nothing. Gotta stand for something, all we fall for nothing, time to stop the fronting. Yeah, we stand for something, never fall for nothing, that's all we wantin'. Wake up, it's a new day. If you're stuck in the past, get the heck up out of my way. My eyes are wide open, thank God, now I can see, and I ain't never gonna stop. To all my people's spirit, they say, why ask why? Well, you coming from the shy, people doing what they gotta do just to get by. And it's a similar story right now in Bed-Stuy. Turn to CNN, this time is no lie. And I know just what you wanted. Other people been stunting, fronting like they don't want it. Yeah. And I hope they get it right, cause I'm in your city sitting pretty each and every night. Damn right, sometimes you gotta let it go. It's so incredible, not can't unforgettable. And try not to forget, we reap what you sow. I would say it again, but you already know. Understand something, need to stand for something, take a stand for something. Lift a hand for something, take my hand for something, understand it's nothing. Gotta stand for something, all we fall for nothing, time to stop the frontin'. Yeah, we stand for something, never fall for nothing, that's all we want.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. That's Maurice Brown from the new CD called The Mood. That is Stand Up. And thank you again. Tell us about that track.
Yeah, Stand Up it came from a saying that my dad used to tell me. He used to say, stand for something or you fall for anything. You know, and I thought right now in this time, this climate that we're in, especially the social climate, I felt that it was a need to make a song like this. So I tapped my great friend Talib Kweli, and I asked him if he wanted to jump on this track with me. And anyone who knows Talib Kweli knows that he's a activist in the streets, and he's always, you know, fighting injustice. So he was happy to jump on that song, and it was like meant to be. Yeah. So I'm super, super excited about the song. Yeah.
And he'll be there at Martyrs?
He will be there at Martyrs on July 28th.
July 28th at 7 and 10:30.
Oh, yeah.
And the all-ages show is the first one. How'd you meet Talib? I'm from Black Star. I mean, that goes way back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think first he called me to do horn arrangements on something, which is usually the story for most albums that I wind up producing and people I wind up producing for. Like, they won't know that. Now people know more that I'm a producer, but at first they didn't know. And they would just call me in for horn arrangements, and I would do a good job on horn arranging. And they'd say, man, this is great. I'm like, oh, great. Let me know if you need any production. And, oh, you produce? And they open the door, and I let them hear something, and they love it. So that's how I basically got all my placements so far.
What do you hear? Do you hear hip hop in bebop? I mean, how do they connect and stuff? And where are the roots at?
Well, you know, hip hop started from a lot of sampling of jazz to begin with, and blues and different genres. But even beyond that, it's more of a rhythmic thing for me, like in an attitude. You know, it's a certain swag that comes with it. And hip-hop to me is more than a genre. It's more like a lifestyle. So you can't really fake it. It's just kind of like jazz. Like, you can't fake jazz. Either you play jazz or you don't play jazz. There's a lot of the younger cats, and I was asking them, you know, you play any jazz? Oh, yeah, we play new jazz. I was like, what is that? You know, what's new jazz? Like, is this either jazz, is this music, or is good music or bad music? There's no shortcuts to playing real music, authentic music in the genre.
Yeah. But you also strive for melody.
Yeah.
Remember you telling me that before.
Yeah, well, melodies are the biggest things for me. Like, I feel like that's the thing that connects me and my listeners the most, because when I'm gone, they still have the melodies lingering in their heads. And they're like, oh, yeah. They want to pull it up. I want to come to the show to support. And I don't take that lightly. I think it's a blessing. And I just want to thank everybody for all the love and support. Seriously.
Where did you learn the melody? Was it through some of the Miles stuff?
Miles is such a big influence of mine. But I think he's definitely probably one of the most melodic guys. I mean, yeah. But you know, when you talk melody, you can't skip Louis Armstrong.
Sure, yeah.
He was all melody, you know. Yeah. So, and that Louis Armstrong is definitely a big influence of mine. So I love Louis Armstrong. I love Clifford Brown, Freddie Hubbard.
This goes back to what you just did, stand up with the trumpet, maybe. And you mentioned Louis Armstrong, has made me think about this. Is the trumpet is the instrument that's closest to the human voice? Can you elaborate on that and how you feel?
I definitely would agree with that statement. If there was some sax players in the room, I'm sure they would disagree. Like Jabari's looking like him grunting over there. But I think the whole way that you have to produce a sound on the trumpet too, like, you have to literally control, it's all about breath control,
right?
Just like a vocalist, you know, so you can only hold a note for as long as you can hold your breath and put it out there. It's not like a piano, you can hold it and hit the sustain pedal, or a guitar, you know, you can just hold a note. So, like, a lot of great guitarists I know, they even practice like scatting as they're playing, so they can keep their phrases within a vocal kind of thing, you know, with their breaths within the phrases together. So,
when you're playing trumpet, are you thinking vocals? I mean, or is it two separate?
I'm definitely thinking, how can I approach this from a very melodic standpoint where I'm singing? Or, well, I want people to hear me play trumpet and say, man, he sounds like he is singing on that horn. Like, there's no words, but I hear words, you know? And it,
yeah.
Like, I just wanted to be that clear, you know?
You've just had so many teachers in such a short time.
Yeah.
Like Alvin Batiste, tell us about what that was like. That was early, but then did you also work with Wynton Marsalis?
Yes. But
Wynton, for both of them. What was
Well, Wynton was one of the first guys that really saw me and motivated me to even take playing trumpet seriously. You know, I saw him at a workshop just to listen.
Where was that at?
I was in Chicago like on the south side of one of these churches. It was a big church. And I basically had my horn out in my lap shaking, and he saw it. He said, man, this guy has his horn. Anybody else? And then a bunch of people had their horns. He said, that only mean one thing. Let's have a jam session. So we came up, and we played, and I went and played my little blues chorus, and I walked away. He's like, no, keep going, because everyone's supposed to only do one chorus. And I did like three choruses, then he pulled me to the side, and he told me, he's like, man, you have a beautiful sound. And I was like, me? He was like, yeah. And at that time, there was, you know, I was pretty young, too. There were a lot of, like, cats in college and stuff like that.
Yeah, how old were you?
I had to be probably about 14, 15.
Wow.
Yeah. And he told me.
Wynton Marsalis is laying that on you.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a beautiful sound, man. He was like, practice. Never stop, man. Practice. One day you'll be super great, even better than me. And I was like, what? Because before that point, I had never practiced. I just picked up my horn whenever it was time to, I felt like playing, you know, just natural talent. You know?
You were doing stuff. I mean, you were 14. I mean, weren't you playing basketball and you were in karate? I mean,
that's right.
So did he teach you to focus?
Well, I had a lot of focus from you know, taekwondo and from karate, definitely. But I think he just made me believe in myself, you know, because I didn't really think much about playing music as a career. I just liked it. You know, it's something that was easy to me when I saw other people struggling. I was like, oh, whatever, and then walk away. And then people get upset. Man, what? How's it so easy for you? I'm like, I don't know. I wasn't trying. But once I applied myself and actually, practice, you know, 12, 13-hour days and really molded what I wanted my sound to sound like before it went into the universe, I think that's when things started really coming together for me.
It kind of, again, I keep thinking of stand up. What is the importance, and you went through it, what is the importance of mentoring for young people today? And look what happened to you.
Yeah.
Somebody took notice of you.
Yeah, I totally think about that all the time. So I try to help as many people as I can. And not just that, I try to listen to as many people as I can, because I think sometimes people get it twisted. Like, you can learn from someone who doesn't know as much as you. They might be doing the one thing that you're missing out on. You know what I mean? So, like, if you always have to be alert and just, like, be willing to exchange ideas and positivity and spread love. Like, that's what I'm about. Just, like, my whole mission is to spread love. I know there's a lot of evil around, and I'm doing what I can do to balance it out.
Well, you're doing a good job.
Hey, thank you.
We're going to take a break for some commercials. You're going to do one more song?
Yeah, that'd be
great. A couple more questions I want to get in, but you brought all these people in, so we'd like to do one more song, too.
Cool.
So don't go away. Thank you. Holy moly, I'm exhausted. Maurice Brown and Band. Man, what a performance.
Thank you so much.
That is Moroccan Dance-Off from the new CD. Is this out now, The Mood?
Yeah, The Mood is out.
Give me all the details. Well, that is just... You didn't have to do that for us. I like to say there's like a little party we throw at my house on Saturday night, but man, I'm overwhelmed. That was really good. What got into you?
We're just getting started.
Wow, so tell us about that song.
Well, that song,
fantastic.
Moroccan Dance Hall. That song is
I actually
composed that song in Morocco.
Did you run? There you go. Where were you at?
I was actually with Marcus Miller. We were over with Marcus Miller, and we had like a jam session at this at the club where we're at, and they were like, "You guys want to take over, play whatever?" And everyone's like, "What do you want to play, Mo?" And I'm really known for like making tunes up on the spot. I this whole song up with the bridge included on the spot. Like we were playing, and I just was watching the people move, and I started the rhythm, and they just came in. Even the stops, the hits, like I just kind of gave the hits, and they came in. And I don't know, it was just kind of beautiful the way it all came together. So I couldn't wait to lay it down on wax.
Yeah, and actually, how can people find the CD? It's on Mobetta Music.
Yeah, it's on Mobetta Music / Ropadope. So I'm partnered up with Ropadope Records.
We got 1 minute left. Our very first guest when the show started was L.C. Cook, the brother of Sam Cook. We're going to do a little podcast tribute to him later in the week. But reason I'm bringing that up, he passed away two nights ago. But Sam Cooke was very much about ownership, and he was one of the first. What's it like to? How important is it for you to have ownership of your own label and your own music? And that was Sam Cooke was a pioneer in that.
It's very important to me. Every record I ever put out, I own my masters, and that's a part of the reason why I stayed so diligent of really wanting to not let anyone, take what's rightfully mine that I create. Those are my babies. Every song, like, I don't have, like, favorites. Like, I love those songs, you know what I mean? So I don't, I really want to protect my legacy and for my family and everything. So Ropado's been really cool partnering with me and understanding that whole concept of, aiding me and not, not robbing me.
Well, thank you so much. It was a memorable performance tonight. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having us.